This is number one bullshit. I think all Irish fans understand who deserves this. I think I have a lot of Irish fans too, you know, because I dominate with all my opponents, you know. Conor come to lightweight and he talk about, oh, I'm greatest, but you guys know, beginning of the year he tap like chicken. End of the year he fight for the title. You know, this is very interesting.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Give Up the Yard. I'm Donny, your MC host, and this week I'm joined by Luxy and Dave. Gentlemen, how are we on this beautiful Sunday night? We're all in Ireland, but we're still not in the same room. We were all at the Ireland match last night, and have any of you guys recovered from that?
There wasn't really much to recover from because nothing happened in the match.
It wasn't very enthralling.
No, certainly wasn't.
I thought the chants were good fun.
Yeah, but even there wasn't, I was saying it to Niamh, who was at the match with us last night, there wasn't much of an atmosphere at the match either.
No, well, I'd agree with Jay there. I mean, where me and you were sat, Donny, there was the singing section. There was very, very long periods of just no one saying anything.
We were the backbone with Ken, another friend of the podcast. You know, looks, he was in the D4 seats, the East Guinness stand premium
prawn
level.
Prawn sandwich brigade.
Enjoy your fucking prawn sandwiches, Luxy, did you?
No, I actually didn't have any. I prefer King prawns. Now we had the baby prawns. So I had to turn them down. Okay. Yeah.
No champagne on top there, though.
No, unfortunately not. That was terrible night, all in all. But yeah, no, we had good seats.
Yeah, I bet you did, and unfortunately such dross, great view to watch such absolute rubbish last night. I suppose some of the, you know, asked me today, didn't watch the match, so what happened in the match? And I just said, 5 minutes, Jeff Hendrick had a shot on goal, which he woefully missed, which he shouldn't have, because he should have put the ball out of play, and then 90 minutes later...
He didn't burn Sullivan. Giving the ball, putting the ball out of play.
I really hope that's the case, Dave, because otherwise that lad needs...
Although, Dave, it's a tough case to argue that, wasn't it?
We don't know yet. Possibly either way.
You do play to the whistle, though, to be fair. And of course, Kasper Schmeichel, like chip off the L block, like, you know, as a bit of a tool in between the sticks. Good goalie, but...
He's a fairly small keeper, though, isn't he?
I don't think he's as tall as his dad.
No, he's near as tall, because I saw him being interviewed after the match, and he seems to be looking up at the report as opposed to most goalkeepers looking down at the report. So, yeah, he doesn't seem to be particularly tall.
No, I know. Oh, he's
he has his dad's note, though.
Yeah, he definitely does.
Oh,
I don't believe him when he says that to this guy. It's like, shut up. Jeff Hendrick's a man's man. If he says he didn't mean it, he didn't mean it. It's good enough for me.
He was fairly anonymous last night, though.
He was, but the whole team was anonymous. I thought Robinson was quite good when he came on. He seemed to do a little bit. He ran with the ball. He ran at them.
Who was given man of the match? Was it Cyrus Christie, was it? I thought he'd done okay.
Cyrus Christie, was he given man of the match? I didn't even hear the man of the match award.
I heard it was Cyrus Christie. I think even Sky Sports gave it to him or something like that. I'm not sure, but... He seemed to be everywhere. I couldn't pinpoint. I thought he was starting left back. Then I seen him on the right. Then I seen him in the number 10 role. And I was thinking, where is he actually playing? And as far as...
Right wing, wasn't it?
Yeah. He did get our only shot on target, so...
You know. He did, yeah.
Yeah, Kasper Schmeichel had a very quiet night. Something that I was saying to my friend Rory that was with us. You know, both goalkeepers barely had much to do. It was an absolute walk in the park for the both of them. Absolute walk in the park. Yeah, it was... Like I was on the way home, I was chatting to the taxi driver and we started off talking about the Ireland match and we started talking about United, but like he just said that he can't bring himself to go watch the Irish team play anymore. He just won't do it. And let alone, like, tickets are €50, you know, just for a normal seat. You know, it's hard to justify... Like even for us, that, you know, we're gonna go to these matches and we're gonna go try and enjoy them as much as we possibly can. But you know, when you're watching what you had to watch last night, you could see after 10 minutes that they were gonna struggle massively to pass the ball around, struggle massively to score a goal, and you know they reverted to type by seeing so much possession to Denmark, and they made Denmark look like a decent team. And without Eriksen, they're not like their number 23, Sisko, was their star man. He's a good player, but on the balance of things, in the grand scheme of things, he's nothing special. So it was disappointing once again, unfortunately.
Well, only for the fact that I was given a ticket, I actually wouldn't have gone, so I didn't actually pay for my ticket.
Surprise there, Dave.
It's an awful lot to pay for a ticket. And I don't think I was alone in that. I'd say a lot of people that were there were given tickets, because it wasn't a sellout, but there was quite a turnout to be fair to them, you know.
Do you know what though? When we were sitting in the pub having a pre-match pint, and I think I made a comment to you last. Just thought, it doesn't feel like there's an Ireland game on.
Yeah, you know,
it was an hour to kick off, and there was no buzz about the place. Even walking down to the stadium was just, Christ, it was like something out of 1984, where they're all going to thing to be lectured, and like, oh, it's all black and white, and it's dark, and it's just grey, and it's horrible. And this feels a bit like what the Owen Hand reign must have felt like, just no hope. Just really, you know, like the taxi driver can't bring himself to a match. I mean, I bought the ticket, I went through the Stoughton era, I'll always go to an Ireland match if I can. Unlike you, they've actually paid for my seat. But,
well done.
Thank you. But yeah, it's actually more fool me, Dave. But it's very depressing. There was nothing. The only fun, my voice is a bit hoarse because we were singing songs, some very disparaging songs towards the Queen, and also Jack Grealish, who I'm sure whose name will be replaced by Declan Rice. give it a few weeks, but that was, you know, there was a bit of fun there. I thought probably the best thing of the night was the Peter Schmeichel one, was Casper Schmeichel, you know, Casper gives a wave, and then when he didn't give him a wave, it's like, just like, shit Peter Schmeichel. That was the only bit of fun. It was juvenile, but yeah, it was the only fun. And then of course we could have had a penalty at the end, which to be fair wasn't.
No, it wasn't a penalty. I saw it when I got home. It was very soft.
Yeah, it was a yellow card. Definitely for simulation. I mean,
are we happy with the result, lads? Are we happy with the, obviously not with the performance, but I mean, considering the last time you played Denmark, you were hammered. It was so embarrassed. To less than a year later to play them and to be drawn 0-0, keep a clean sheet and get a result against them.
No, I'm not happy.
Is that something you're cheering?
No, I'm not happy. No, I'm not happy with that. That's how far our expectations have dropped. That we didn't get. We lost 5-1 to this lot, and they had the only world class player on the pitch, who absolutely tore us a new one. And there was a couple of errors in that 5-1. You know, there was individual errors, and then from the manager as well as players, and he was missing. And when you take him, you take Eriksen out of that team, they're a very ordinary team. You know, they just play football a little bit better than us. Not a lot in it, I don't think. And the fact we got Haydn off Wales 4-1 in our last competitive game away from home, who yet again had the world-class player on the pitch, and we didn't know how to handle him. It just seemed, no, I'm not happy. When you play a team as average as Denmark, I think if you put it up to them, we don't have the technical prowess, and we're not going to play it. You put it up to them, you give the fans something to cheer, especially on a rainy night in Dublin in October. You know, normally perfect conditions for the Irish football team. Put it up to them in the rain, get the fans singing, make it as unbearable and as horrible as possible for the UA team, and maybe get a goal or two and get the 3 points. No, I'm not happy at all. We played like we were the UA team, just sitting back, letting them pass it about, make it feel like Brazil. And sure, they were happy to do the same when we got a little tiny bit of possession. They were happy to sit back and let us pass it about. And, you know, O'Neill came across and he was giving all this nonsense as well. Oh, we passed it about a bit. We can play. No, we can only play when the other team are camped in their own half and we're in our own half passing the ball around. So that doesn't work with me, Martin. Sorry. Long-winded answer. Basically, no, not happy at all. Sorry, Jay.
I'm only asking the question. I agree with you, Donny. I think we definitely need to be expecting more than just drawing nil all with a team like Denmark, especially when they don't have their player, and especially when we're home. We conceded so much possession yesterday, and we basically let them off. Bar maybe a 10-minute spell in the second half, I thought Denmark was a better team, but they weren't great with the ball. We just allowed them to have too much. We didn't show any initiative to try and go.
It seemed to me, I think it was fair to say, the message was, don't get hiding, don't have it out of sight, and the last 10 minutes we'll have a go.
Yeah, it was fair.
We'll hit it long. It's a typical Martin O'Neill. There's no plan to it. It's just keep it tight, stay with it, either have the lead, you know, try to make a goal. If we do, then we'll try to protect that goal. If not, if it's still 0-0 or we're inside, we'll go hell for leather for the last 10 minutes. We'll play, you know, we'll probe a bit more with a few more long balls. That's all. That's the matter.
Yeah, it's the same team speech every single match. It never changes. You know, he doesn't even need a script. He knows the words off by heart. And it's evidenced by what we see every time Ireland play. But I think what was also noticed by last night, that Stephen Ward wasn't playing. If he had been playing, then things could have been drastically different because he was woeful this time last year against the Danish when we were playing at home. And obviously, yeah, Eriksen made the difference. If Eriksen was playing last night, he would have controlled that game. He would have found a few little cue passes, but Ireland sat back. As we said, they see a lot of possession, but anytime they got it up, you know, poor Shane Long, you know, he's not the greatest player in the world. I know, Donny, you're a very big fan of his, but when he hasn't got the stature or the height to be able to control the ball and knock it down consistently. But even if he did, you know, the likes of Hendrick and Arthur, they're not rushing forward to support him. You know, the wingers aren't getting in close enough to support him whenever he does have the ball. So our attack and threat is completely nullified because the guy hasn't got a hope of being effective with what they're being asked of him. So it's become the norm. Should we be disappointed that we didn't get hammered 5-1 by an average Danish team at home? No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. If that's what we're going to accept from now on, there's no point going to watch your team play. There absolutely isn't, because all you're going to get is misery, and you're just going to live in through a period of just pessimism. Which is the way, you know, unfortunately, the majority of Irish fans see the football team. They're horribly pessimistic, very little optimism. And as we've discussed over the months, for a variety of reasons, we keep coming back to it. And it is the management. And I just don't see it changing.
Well, it's very football, isn't it?
No, how do you lads think the match is going to go on Tuesday? Another boring 0-0 draw?
Same again. Probably 1-1, 0-0. More dead end football.
Just
the same rubbish again. The atmosphere will be flat. You know, and if anyone ever sits at home, I don't know if they do, you know, sits at home and goes, oh, the atmosphere is rubbish there, those fans need to get behind the team. Well, I'll tell you what, you stand in the pissing rain like we did. Not you, Luxie, you were stuffing into a palm sandwich. But you stand in the pissing rain and, you know, with your feet in a puddle. And you're trying to sing. You're thinking, well, you know, we will get behind you, guys, but you need to give us something here, you know, shot on goal, anything. We didn't have a shot on goal for 72 minutes.
That's correct.
I think the nearest then was Denmark hitting the post. Sisto hit the post. It was just it's pointless. It's just dead end football. It's just why are we competing? You know, why are we even doing this? Like, what is the point? We're just trying to play for
draws all the time, you know. What I think is sad is that, like, we as Irish fans don't seem to have a voice, in the sense that the majority voice and the majority opinion of the fans just isn't heard or listened to by the FAI at all. Well, it's as if we are irrelevant in how we want the future of Irish football to progress at an international level. We have no relevance or importance.
No, we don't. I'll tell you what, I've got the program in front of me. And John Delaney, obviously the CEO, he gives a little statement, and you got Donald Conway is the FAI president, but John Delaney, speaking of the future of Irish football, he starts off with, there has been tremendous progress made in our continuation of developing Irish football since we last had a game here at the Aviva Stadium. A good example would be the FAI Festival of Football, which visited over 40 different clubs, supplied over 1 million in grants, and reached almost 5 million people on social media following 10 days in County Cork. It was our biggest festival yet in the 12 years since it's been running. And he gives you a lot of nonsense along here about how they have grassroots football is excellent and all that. Well, there was one interesting thing, something I wasn't actually aware of, was Dalymount Park. He says about Dalymount Park that is one of the number of exciting projects that are underway. Apparently they're redeveloping it and they're going to turn it into a new 6,000 seater stadium with Shelburne. I wasn't aware of that actually, and a friend of mine works for Sutton. We're actually playing Bohemians yesterday. I think they lost some penalties, Sutton did, and apparently she was telling me that's getting done up. So I suppose that's a bit of good news, but obviously we're talking about how dreary the future of football is, and he's going on about how rosy it is. I mean, do you guys...
He's living on another planet.
He is a bit, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Counting his money is what he's doing.
Yeah. I mean, he goes on about, well, the next generation already making waves. You know, he's on about the under-17s and all that. He's gone on, we've done this, and we're giving Drogheda, they're going to get a new stadium and all that. And then he finishes up saying, finally, I would like to thank all of the Ireland football fans for the support for the team. Without your support, it would not be the same. We truly appreciate it. Enjoy the game. Well, we didn't enjoy it, John.
That's sincerity there, that is.
Yeah, we really didn't. Did you see at the end, actually, James McLean? He was on a yellow card. This is just typical of that bloke. He was on a yellow card. And it was just before the final whistle went, and Casper Schmeichel put the ball down to kick it out, and James McLean ran over and kicked it. Pure dissent, bookable offence, and he should have been sent off, and the referee didn't see it. It was quite funny, actually, Luxie, because Dave obviously saw because he was with me, but I went fucking mental at James McLean shouting. I'm like, what are you doing that for, you fucking idiot, like that? And Ken was like, shut up, will you? Shut up. You know, as if I'll get him caught, like, but the referee will hear me. he's got away with it. Shut up, will you? You're fucking rat you. Yeah, he was called. What are you ratting him out for? It's like fucking, you know, it was just a funny, I thought it was funny anyway, but yeah, he should have been sent off, because you know, you can't be doing that. It's a bookable second offence. So
He looked very tired last night after about 75 minutes.
But he's not match fit, is he?
Did you hear O'Neill's comments as well after the match? He felt that we played well and that Denmark were holding on at the end of the game,
because by making that substitution, exactly. an attacker for a centre back or something,
like a concession that they needed to hold on against us.
Still a stretch.
In his head, it was a good performance, and in his head, it was something to be, you know, proud of, because we didn't get hammered 5-1, and you know, O'Neill sees this as a positive result.
That's an achievement to him, isn't it?
That's worrying.
It really is. Just to, with tomorrow, what score do you reckon? I reckon 0-0. Luxie?
What, the England Spain match?
No. Fuck's sake. It's a Monday. It's supposed to be going out Monday. Pretend it's a Monday, will you?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Tomorrow, the match, Tuesday, yeah? Yeah?
I'd say 0-0.
0-0. Dave?
1-0 to Wales.
Oh, doubly pessimistic.
No, I'll actually revise my prediction. I'd say 2-0 Wales, sir.
Oh, trebly pessimistic.
Yeah, I'd say 2-0 Wales.
I'm going to be the positive voice. 0-0.
Fair enough.
He is from Northern Ireland, isn't he, the manager? So, like, every match in Northern Ireland finishes 0-0, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Very much. Yeah. 0-0. Ards, Coleraine.
Yeah,
0-0. 0-0. Just to finish up on the match there, actually. I found something quite funny. I was on the bus home with Dave.
A romantic journey together.
It was. We got to drive within the lights. It was very
good. I didn't think it was romantic, to be honest.
Oh. No, Dave wasn't happy with it, yeah.
The spark wasn't there, like, you know.
Donny, you have to step up your game.
I really do, don't I? I know.
Dave's just being a bit of a tease, that's all.
I think he is. I mean, who wouldn't find talking about football on a bus romantic, Luxy? I mean, I think Giuseppe sounds way too high.
For that, I think
we should just
agree.
Be friends, you know. I think that'll do good.
That's what got us into this trouble in the first place, Dave. Then this conversation's gone really fucking weird.
Yeah,
right?
It's getting very, very fucking weird.
Yeah,
so weird that I'm actually cursing.
Like
now.
The bus last night, very sneak. Something that will give you, I'm sure will make you laugh a bit, Luxy. You didn't buy a program, did you?
No, I actually didn't. No, I never do.
Right. Yeah, but basically, they have a little section in it, All-Ireland 11. And Stephen Hunt was asked to give his all-time 11. And in given the goalkeeper, yes, Shea Given, fair enough. Right back, Seamus Coleman. Centre back, McGrath with Richard Dunne. Then Irwin on the left, fair enough.
Yeah.
Up front, he's got Robbie Keane, Duff. Not really for me. On the right, he's got Ray Houghton. In the centre, Roy Keane, Brady. And on the left, I kid you not, he's got Stephen Hunt. He's put himself.
When you say up front, Robbie Keane and Duff, not for me. Surely you don't mean Robbie Keane. Surely he'd be the first name up front.
It was Stephen Hunt, yeah.
No. You mean, when you said Robbie Keane and Duff, you said, not for me. Surely you're not talking about Robbie Keane.
Oh, no. I'm talking about Duff and Robbie Keane. Yeah, I mean, Duff's a winger, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, that's
I mean, for me, it's all Richard and Robbie Keane.
Yeah.
That was, you know, because Aldridge was a poacher and Robbie Keane would play behind him, behind Aldridge.
Now,
Robbie Keane could hit him from outside the box. Aldridge, a poacher, and a fucking good one at that. But I mean, to put yourself on the left wing, it's just ridiculous. But that's Stephen Hunt for you. And yeah, it's not really a surprise with him and his brother, like, you know. He was an impact sub, wasn't he?
Bit of a head case.
The only impact he's ever really had in football is an impact on Peter Cech's skull.
True that.
Very true. True words haven't been spoken. Right, lads. Well, hopefully, you never know, a miracle might happen. You know, we might have something to shout about tomorrow, but I'm sure we'll be talking about it on Sunday. So we'll leave the football there for another week, hopefully a bit more positive. Obviously, we've had a week, Luxy, since King Connor has fallen off the throne. And he has fallen. And of course,
he has indeed.
He has indeed. And of course, when you fall, the press are always there to kick you when you're down. And my God, they are kicking him while he's down. So I have to ask yourself, you are the MMA expert on the podcast here. Well, you do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, so there you go. Have you been a bit stunned? Have you been surprised, disappointed, or what? With all the reporting that's been going on, there was one that I shared with you from the Irish Independent. I think it was Amy Sweeney that was definitely
disappointing. Yeah,
I mean, he went on the attack. He basically was calling McGregor. He didn't say it, but he was basically calling McGregor, saying that he wasn't a high class athlete. Basically saying that it's not a sport. He really, really laid the boot in to this. And now we're hearing more reports saying that there was another one there in the Independent I read saying that the Irish fans, you know, the McGregor fans, maybe they weren't Irish, some were probably American, saying they were dressed like him in Armani suits and going on like that, and they were entitled, and it's really just putting the boot into sport. And, you know, now they're tying it in with Cristiano Ronaldo and the rape allegations he's having. And all this kind of stuff, really, really pissing down all over the UFC and especially Conor McGregor. You know, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, I think it's a bit.
Well, he's the embodiment of the organization. So if you go after him by proxy, you go after the UFC. I think a lot of people would see Conor McGregor and the UFC as the same thing, because he is by far the biggest star that they've ever had. And could be the biggest star they'll ever have. But, you know, the content of his article, he did make some, like, not all of his points were incorrect. His statements about Conor McGregor's performance were absolutely justified. I can't argue with whatsoever. I haven't even bothered to watch the fight again, because what I saw, as I said last week, was a complete domination by a fighter. But what was actually interesting, during the fight, what they were able to do is, because of all the crowd noise when you're watching a fight live or you're watching a fight on normal tape, you obviously can't hear what the fighters are saying to each other, but
yeah,
they have microphones on the side of the cage and they can zoom, they can hone in on what the fighters actually say to each other. And during the fight, Khabib is saying, or Habib, I think is the right way to pronounce it, is saying to McGregor, let's talk, let's talk. And that's based on the fact that he publicly said after they had the bus incident that they wanted, he was willing to have a one-to-one conversation with Conor McGregor, locked away in a room, no cameras, no publicity, no nothing, no bullshit, a man-to-man talk, which of course McGregor didn't go near because, you know, he wants to promote this fight, he wants to make money off it. But interestingly enough, while he was saying, let's talk now, as they stood up at the end of the second round, McGregor goes, it's just business, which goes to show, which I have said to many people, and hopefully I've said it on the podcast as well, the way McGregor goes on, yes, it can be offensive, and yes, he can cross the line, but it's purely promotion. He is a Jack the Lad character. He is louder than life. His coach, John Kavanagh, was on the Rogan podcast during the week, and I listened to it, and he said, he essentially said, whether McGregor is the biggest star in the world or whether he'd be an ordinary lad in the gym, he'd be exactly who he is. He will not change. He is who he is. And, you know, if young men are copying Conor McGregor, to state that they are copying him in a negative way is incorrect, because what mixed martial arts has done, what martial arts does for a lot of people, it provides a forum of where they can engage in rigid, positive, beneficial training that not only benefits their body in terms of their physical conditioning and self-defense, but it also it mollifies any anger or any predisposed conditions that they may have through their upbringing. You know, if they're from a troubled background, martial arts are perfect for honing in that anger, especially for young men, especially for young girls that need a bit of direction from a senior individual, whether it's a male or a female, whereby they know that within this context, within these four walls of the gym, there are rules to obey. You obey these rules, we will have your back, we will respect you. They gain respect and they learn respect. And for that journalist to come out and say that people who engage in mixed martial arts or people who do martial arts are idiots, it's completely false, because mixed martial arts is described by Joe Rogan. It is snobbery as well. You know, there isn't. I do believe there is an agenda within Irish media to slander and denigrate mixed martial arts because they want to promote boxing. They see boxing as the prime pugilistic sport that has no that should have no competitor whatsoever, which the UFC rightfully is. But Joe Rogan describes mixed martial arts as a high level chess game with dire consequences. That's what it is. It's depicted as these two animals that go in and just beat the head off each other. It's not. There's a lot of intellect, there's a lot of thought that has to go into winning a fight, especially if it goes to the ground and you're doing wrestling or jiu-jitsu. It's highly technical. It's highly nerdy. Idiot in mixed martial arts will not last long. So what that journalist was saying in that article, he made some good points about McGregor, but what he was saying about mixed martial arts and martial arts is completely false. It's completely wrong.
I mean, what he said, one of the comments he did say, did laugh at, is that, like, you know, he went in, he totally outclassed and outmaneuvered McGregor, and then had like enough energy after a grueling fight to run into the crowd for seconds. And I just had the image of him jumping over the cage running in.
But he's not wrong. He's not wrong in saying that, though.
He's absolutely
not. No. And of course, McGregor's asking for a rematch too.
I think they'll get it. I think they'll do it. I think it's business, and I think money talks.
Yes.
And I think you will. I don't care what Khabib said after, or what he said before, I want to be the poster boy, and then that's it, not get involved. No, I don't think so. I think money does talk. They can talk about money doesn't mean anything. Like, that's nonsense. Sure, why would you go in and get the head punched off you, you know, or put yourself in that danger if you weren't getting a decent paycheck, you know? And that's true with any sort of sport. But I do think there's an awful lot of snobbery. What do you think? You're very quiet on this. Do you agree? Do you think there's snobbery towards MMA in this country, or you know? And if there is, well, is the criticism justified?
There is snobbery. I mean, it's not saying as a. We have Ireland has a very kind of into our outlook on Saturday sort of things. Like it's probably seen as barbaric and, you know, not really, it's not something that's ever been a thing, and it would never be a thing because you're only for Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
He's more covered in the news as a personality more than for his achievements. That's what he's in Irish media as. He's a celebrity rather than actually, he's just MMA star Conor McGregor. That's basically all they say about him. Everything else is about him as a person. So that's how the Irish media view him. They don't recognize his achievements. They don't really talk about him that much. They don't cover his actually winning the... I think our team might have mentioned it once or twice, but that's about it. It's not seen as a sport in people like Paul Kimmage, as some of our bigger sports journalists like refuse to even acknowledge it as a sport. Places like Second Captains, you know, I don't know if they even cover it. I don't think they do. So yeah, it's niche. It's probably not like. And the other thing is, we had an unfortunate incident about 2 years ago with Jay would know more about it than I would about the guy who lost his life in the ring. And obviously another kind of mark on the sport, which is left.
People have died in the boxing ring, and they've died on the football pitch, and they've died playing Gaelic football, and that, you know, club
that
level.
That is true. People have died in amateur boxing.
Formula One racing, Ayrton Senna.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
but when a sport is already fighting a battle against the country to say, oh, this is barbaric, and then that happens.
Yeah.
It just doesn't look good. Boxing is more accepted, I suppose, as Jay rightly said earlier on, as a pugilistic sport. It's got, you know,
it's because it's been there for so many years. It's a bit like Coca-Cola, isn't it? Coca-Cola was made in 1886. If that came through now as a brand new drink, it'd never get passed. Because, you know, all the,
and people keep forgetting that mixed martial arts is a sport. It's only been around for 20 years.
Yeah, back in the late 90s with Ken Shamrock, Dan Severn, and all that. I was reading a book there by Declan Lynch, I think his name is, about Ireland and you know, pre-Tally 90 and all that, and post-Tally 90. And he made an interesting comment about the Irish. And he said that, and he referred to the Irish as Paddy. That's how he referred to it as. But, you know, he said it at the beginning, I say Paddy because, like, a black rap artist would say the N-word. You know, not offensive, just, but that's how he, you know, it's very, very witty, very intelligent. But that's, you know, for anybody who's reading that going, oh, I find that offensive. But that's why he said it. But he said that Paddy is obsessed with people liking him around the world. He must be liked. They want to be liked. Wherever they go, they have to be liked. And do you think that maybe with Conor McGregor, he goes against that because he's so outrageous? A lot of it's put on, obviously, for show. He's so outrageous. He's so over the top. He's a baddie. If he was a wrestler, he'd be a baddie. If he was in a movie, he'd be a baddie. But he'd be a baddie that you'd like to maybe see win because he's funny.
He definitely embellishes in his self-created identity. In a public forum. But he knows what he's doing as well, though. He knows it sells tickets.
But do you think, though, that is why there is such a negative reaction to him by a lot of mainstream media, that they look at that and go, oh, no, that's in that subconscious of the Irish person that we... And listen, you know, being an Irish person, being abroad so many times, I'm always like, I want to represent Ireland. I always want people to think, go, Irish people are great. It seems to be in what we need to be liked. Do you think that's why it's gone against Ireland so much?
No, I think, you know, Irish people... I don't want to generalize too much, but when they see an Irish person, I think they see an Irish person as respectful, mannerly, relatively quiet and private as to how they've achieved any sort of financial wealth. And McGregor, the way McGregor portrays himself in public, it goes completely against the grain. They don't like loud, garish, obnoxious, successful people who literally say, this is how I'm making my money. If you don't like it, fuck you. Because he doesn't have to respond, or because he isn't under any type of social control, by, you can call them Neely, you can call them whoever, like the media basically. You know, he's a very easy scapegoat to put down when he's unsuccessful. But when he is successful, there isn't enough credit, in my opinion, given to him. Habib Nurmagomedov got a hero's welcome when he flew home to Dagestan. He was on national TV. And I know McGregor has been on the Late Late Show a couple of times. I think he refused to go on now because they won't pay him enough money. And that's fair enough. I think the last time they offered him 50 grand, he just said, no, that's, I'm not interested in that. But, you know...
That was all he's like budget for the year.
It probably was, yeah. But like he got a hero's welcome when he went home. McGregor got none of that. He was on their Prime TV channel talking about the fight. He wasn't given like a 15-minute segment on the show. It was an hour interview with him discussing his career, discussing the fight, discussing the future. It was a full-depth national interview and investment in a Russian superstar, an amazing combat mixed martial artist. McGregor's had none of that, absolutely none of that. And if you look at the size of Russia as a country and their population, the fact that one fighter in what is deemed to be a niche sport could get that much exposure in Russia, and McGregor gets exposure for all the other things he does, bar what he should and only be known for, which is competing in mixed martial arts. He doesn't get enough shine when he has been brilliant. Is he ever going to reach those heights again? I probably don't think he will, because that real hunger, that real desire, he's got too much fuck you money, in the sense that he doesn't need to do anything anymore. No. He just, that hunger, that desire to be the best of the best of the best at any cost isn't there anymore, because he's got too many distractions. And I think having a son would definitely change his perspective of what he's willing to put himself through in the octagon. And he has talked about that before. He ideally, you know, he said he wants to make a shitload of money and retire. He's 30. It's a perfect age to retire early. He's received very little head damage. Is he going to do that? No, because his ego and his legacy, in his opinion, is at risk after this loss. So he's going to try to redeem it in another big super fight. And if he doesn't smash the guy or have a really big fight, his star will further dwindle. He won't sell as many pay-per-views. Mixed martial arts, like any other sport, is fickle as fuck. So if he doesn't achieve what he says he's going to do in the next fight, he possibly could retire. I think he's got two more fights left, and he'll be off into the sunshine after that.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, like, I hope he does. He cannot become the journeyman. He can't. No. And I'll tell you what, you know, I heard something in the, I was in the gym there in London, and
that's where you live, isn't it?
That's where I live, Luxie. But they were in this particular gym, they have the mats where you do stretching, and some lads go into this particular gym and they like to have some boxing, whatever, and you might do a bit of mat wrestling. Oh, I don't know what's really going on. I just get on my own thing. But when it's finishing up, I heard one of them say something that really got under my skin, but also kind of reminded me where we're at. When the trainer there, like, you know, he wants me to do UFC, like he wants me to become the next Habib. And I felt like turning around saying to him, you prick, it's Conor McGregor, you know, because about a year ago, that would have been, he wants to turn me into next Conor McGregor, but now it's Habib. And I'm thinking,
yeah,
shit, you know, just a little thing like that, you know. And
yeah, there's always someone lined up to take the biggest star's name, always, no matter what sport, no matter what era, there's always someone there to replace him.
Absolutely.
Conor McGregor's not replaceable.
No, and you know, look, I know he gets up people's noses and they're saying, you know, oh, he's racist, you know, now people are coming out, oh, his racial tirade against, okay, fair enough, but you know, we know what he's about, we're not excusing it, we know what he's about, he sells tickets, it obviously does, it may be a bit tasteless, but that's the nature of the sport.
It is, though, but like, you know, when I heard some of his comments that can be perceived as somewhat xenophobic, as intolerant towards Islam, to think that there aren't people in this country that would go, yeah, he's right. I absolutely agree with what he's saying. Because there definitely are people that would be of the same mindset as him when it comes to Islam. You know, he isn't tolerant towards that religion whatsoever. He's entitled to his opinion like everyone else. But I guarantee there's people at home watching YouTube, watching reading what he's saying in the papers and going, yeah, he's fucking right. McGregor's dead. McGregor's telling what it's all about. it definitely happens.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't actually see what he said until the fight was finished, and I saw what he was saying. He was trying to get him to drink the whiskey, and
yeah, he was it.
And he was saying, you know, Khabib obviously, you know, he does his talking in the ring. He said, oh, you don't even speak your own language. You know, you can't even speak Irish. And he said something in Irish, and he goes, you know what that means? Oh, you shit in the bus. You shit in the bus. Because, you know,
That was funny, though.
A mate of mine from Croatia was telling me about that, what he said. And he found it hilarious. Like, oh, I love Conor McGregor. He's hilarious. Okay. But yeah, I mean, look.
He does have a lot of wit.
He is, yeah, he does, yeah. I think he is funny, you know, but it's a bit, you know, high in the knuckle, but yeah, it's a bit close to knuckle, but I think it's funny. But, you know, for what it's worth, McGregor, I won't kick the lad when he's down, to be fair. I think he's brought, for a couple of years he's been on at the top, I think he's brought a lot of joy, and I think he's brought a lot of, I think pride to the country. He was the very best for a short period of time, for a couple of years there. You know, the trip for me going over to you, Luxy and Dave, for the fight when he knocked Aldo out in 14 seconds, that was amazing. You know, I'm watching him when he beat Chad Mendes, my first ever McGregor fight, and I'm so proud when he won it. I didn't know what the fuck I was watching at the time. Total bandwagon. You know, and just getting that, talking about it, and you know, he made us interested. He gave us something like a distraction. So I like him. I won't kick him while he's down. I know what he's about. I know it's show business. He might hold some of those views personally, but I think some of the stuff's been absolutely buying out of order. Some of the guys are making points that are legitimate, like against Dana White, and what, you know, saying he's a grubby little promoter, which I said myself last week, but at the end of the day, promoters have to promote. They have to make money, otherwise what the fuck are they doing? So they have to find an opening in the market and go for it. And
it's a massive opening in the market when you have a guy like him on your roster.
Yeah, absolutely.
It absolutely is, though. When McGregor retires, the mixed martial arts scene or the coverage in this country will dry up in a second. Yeah. You won't hear about it in the papers at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
At all. The interest will be dead. Which is a shame, but sport's only been around for 20 years, so it still has a bright future, in my opinion. But yeah.
It is a shame. But hopefully, anyway, I personally like to see Conor retire. I'd actually love to see him come back and beat Khabib, but I don't think that's possible. But I'd like to see him retire. He cannot become the journeyman.
It is possible. It's always possible, but it's unrealistic.
Brings a shot going in.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, there's two instances in the fight where he was quasi-cheating as well, so... He was hooking on to Habib's gloves, which you're not allowed to do. And when Habib had him on the ground, he kneed him in the head, which you're not allowed to do either. So,
I don't know. I reckon he didn't want to fight Habib. I think that the whole incident with the bus and suing him and all this kind of stuff, that maybe there was a bit of, right, you're going to fight this guy.
Yeah. I think the reality set in.
You need to fight this guy. Maybe Conor didn't seem interested. I mean, Conor went on. He didn't, you know, you share an interview where he wasn't messing about. He was deadly serious, but he looked apprehensive. He looked edgy. His breathing wasn't great when he went on. Oh, I love the sport. I love the competition. I'm thinking, well, if you love it that much, then you wouldn't have been out of it for 2 years, mate. Do you think maybe somewhere down the line he turned around and, you know, there was like a trade-off. We won't sue the fuck out of you. Tie our arseholes up in court for years if you agree to have this fight. Because obviously Khabib will probably never get another bigger payday unless maybe it's a rematch, and won't get a bigger payday than this. And do you remember, maybe there's some golden handcuffs deal, some like a trade off.
Maybe that's what he meant, but it's just business.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's an element of that, but McGregor's always said, like, I kind of feel like I know this guy instantly. I don't. But he's always inside, isn't he? No, yeah, with a shotgun to my head. No, he's not. He's always been interested in a challenge. Trying to put together a puzzle.
2 years out of sport, though.
Well, $100 million, Donny.
I know, that's what I'm saying to you. Like, he made $100 million from one
serious
fight.
It's serious money, yeah. Now, I remember years ago he said, if you ever hear me talking, all I know what I'm talking about is mixed martial arts and money. Mixed martial arts and money. If you hear me talk about anything else, tell me to shut up because I'm talking through my arse. That's all he knows. And even after the Mayweather fight, he was still in the gym consistently enough, training the various aspects of what you train when you're training mixed martial arts. Yeah. So even though he has been taken away from the UFC for 2 years, he has still been in the gym and he has still been practicing as much as before. Absolutely not. Yeah, but that desire and that passion has always been there. I mean, he's 30. He's still a very young man. Yeah, he's still got maybe 2 or 3 years at a top level, inverted commas. But mentally, I has to distract you. Of course it does.
Yeah. Mentally, he has to be thinking, fuck this, like, I'm getting paid $5 million before bonuses and fees that will be taken out for the state athletic commission, Nevada, and all that kind of stuff. You know, I'm getting paid $3 million for this match fee. I had a boxing match for $100 million. I don't have to work again. It would turn your head a bit, you know, and he's probably thinking movies and, you know, and he tapped very quickly as well. We were talking about that last night. So he didn't seem arsed in the fight. You know, I'm not trying to make excuses. I didn't bother.
Do you know who John Anik is?
No.
John Anik is commentator for the UFC and he released a tweet, I think it was on Wednesday or Thursday of the week, whereby he said that he heard that while McGregor was getting ready before the fight, there were a lot of people in and out the room, which was unusual. He had a different fella fixing up his gloves, which was unusual. But at the same time, obviously, it's no excuse for his performance. And also, he was of the opinion that he looked a little bit nervous. He wasn't as confident as he always was. And he didn't look quite ready or fit enough to compete against Khabib. I didn't personally notice that myself. I thought he looked very confident, very relaxed before the fight. I think he was foolishly arrogant. That was my opinion. But John Anik, you know, he works for the UFC. He's a commentator for the UFC. He would be in contact with people that would be within the vicinity of the locker room. And he would have seen Conor McGregor in the flesh a lot more than we have. And he would have especially seen him walk out into the ring. So
you can always sense something in person, can't you?
You probably can sense
the energy or something, yeah. Yeah.
Now, in fairness, that was just this guy's opinion. But at the same time, you know, just no excuse. He got beat.
He got beat.
And hopefully, you know, as I said last week, I think the melee was much ado about nothing. It's definitely a black stain and a black eye to the sport. It's not one that will shut the sport down, excuse me. But hopefully there'll be more analysis of him being poor on the night as opposed to that overshadowing his performance. But yeah, it's, you know, another life in the UFC there. Conor McGregor sitting in the news. It's brilliant for the UFC. More UFC 229 pay-per-views will be bought. They'll make more money. He'll make more money. It's been another great week for the UFC.
And then we're back to nightclubs in Syracuse in 5 years' time. Right.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Well, thanks for that, lads. I think we better wrap it up.
Just one thing I may say. I think I may have a contender for Wanker of the Week.
Oh?
I'm not sure if you saw it. Do you know who Deontay Wilder is? He's a boxer.
Oh, yeah.
He was on American TV, and I think they were asking him, you know, how hard can you punch? So he said, I'll show you. And there happened to be a fella dressed up as a mascot. Yeah. Like in a, you know, the texture of the costume was like a foam costume. So Deontay Wilder just didn't, for whatever reason, I don't think he's ever heard of a human being wearing a costume before. But he decides to lump, like he whacked the fella really hard in the face. and he broke his jaw. He didn't realize that there was a human being inside it.
So did he think he was hitting
Yeah.
He came out and says, "Oh, well, what do you mean? I didn't know. Of course, I do. I respect this guy."
Yeah.
It's just like his explanation like made no sense. He didn't realize it, and then someone told him, and he's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I respect this human being. Please don't sue me."
Yeah. So yeah, when I saw that, I kind of went. I mentioned the lads to see if they think he's a worthy nominee.
I'll go with that. Wanker of the Week.
In a world where he's going to be fighting Tyson Fury, you're going to say between the two of them, who's the wanker of the week? And it's not Tyson Fury.
Amazing.
Well, Dave, I'll reserve judgment on it because, you know, Tyson Fury is Tyson Fury. He can definitely come out with something in the next couple of weeks, but for now it's Deontay Wilder for me.
Yeah, I hope he comes out with the Batman thing again. That was great. When the guy came out dressed as a Joker, the Riddler, or whatever, and he came out dressed as Batman, he tackled him in front of.
The best thing he ever did was sing to his wife or after a fight.
But Aerosmith, was it?
Aerosmith, yeah.
What song was it? Loving the Hell Out of It.
Don't want to miss a thing, yeah.
Jesus.
It's one of the most cringeworthy things I've ever seen live national sport, but yeah.
He's a fucking character. You know, apparently he was going to represent Ireland, but there was something. He is actually from an Irish family, and he wanted to represent Ireland, but they couldn't for some. There was like some red tape about it, and I don't know the ins and outs of it, but he ended up representing Britain instead.
He allegedly still lives in a caravan.
What? Have you seen someone else's caravans? I'd live in a fucking caravan. Sky dish off the side of it. Fucking definitely down in Cornwall somewhere. Anyway, enough of that. Lads, thank you very much for that this week. Just a quickie it was. Not really a lot to talk about, really. But the match, the fact we got 20 minutes out of that is an achievement in itself.
Well done, lads.
Yeah, well done, Jesus. So anyway, hopefully, next week we're going to be talking about the 0-0 draw with Wales. And we also have a bit of Premier League football that's back, thank God. So, lads, have a lovely week. And we'll talk to you again. And I'll see you guys tomorrow.
We'll record the next episode of the podcast in exactly 6 days' time, not six 7 days. Days' time.
6 days, so,
6 days, not seven.
Yeah, see you tomorrow, Tuesday, at the match. And have a good 6 days.
I'll see you next Tuesday, Dunny.
See you next Tuesday too, Luxie. And see you tonight, Dave. Because we're all meeting up on Monday for our meal.
Oh, yeah, but I will also see you reckon, Tuesday as well.
You're going to see me tonight, Dave, Monday. Hello.
I'm fully aware of what's going on here.
Good man.
Glad you are, too.
Thing. Always know what's going on, Dave. Right, lads. See you 6 days.
Okay.
Sorry, see you tonight. See you tonight. Fucking I don't know.
See you later, lads.
Go on, bye.
Get up the yard.